She was warned. She was given an explanation. Nevertheless, she persisted.
Hello and welcome to The Persistence. This is She Who Persisted, the Nasty Podcast. My name is Beatrice and I'm here with...
Elizabeth.
And we have a very special guest today, Michael.
Hello.
Michael is an artist and a photographer and he's a feminist. And this is why we have him on the show today, because we'll talk about male feminists and whether that's possible.
It's possible. I mean... It's possible. It's just not all men who identify themselves as male feminists are actually male feminists.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. There's a difference between labeling yourself a feminist and actually being a feminist.
Yeah. I had in grad school, I had a friend. We were talking about feminism in one of my grad school classes, and my professor, and I don't think she meant to do this, but she was talking about, you know, performance or performativity, and she said something about how, well, it's not enough to wear a t-shirt that says I'm a feminist. You actually have to, you know, be the feminist. And at the same time, there was this guy in the class who had a shirt on that said, this is what a feminist looks like. And I don't even think she was aware of it. I mean, maybe subconsciously, but definitely not consciously. She was just so clueless about it, but it was just so perfect because he was also such a dick that like it was just like everything kind of culminated and came together in this like perfect moment. It was wonderful.
But did he react in any way to it?
He did not. He was totally stoic and had no reaction whatsoever. He just kept taking notes.
Okay.
But everybody else in class was like, ooh, burn, burn.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God.
It was just perfect.
Yeah, he probably didn't even think that he could be the one.
Oh, no. I'm sure he was like, oh, she's talking about someone else.
Those other guys.
I'm just going to keep taking my notes.
Yeah. All right. So... as you probably all know, on the 7th of May, Eric Schneiderman, who was the Attorney General of New York City, got accused by four different women who were, I think almost all of them, previous romantic partners of...
I think that's right, of
physical assault and violence. And those four women were the blogger and activist Michelle Manning Barish, the author and actor Tanya Selvaratnam, and then also an unnamed lawyer and a fourth woman who also wished to stay anonymous. And they all said that Schneiderman repeatedly hit, choked, or violently slapped them or called them names and all of that without their consent. And also, there was also one woman who was not in a romantic relationship with him, and she said that he made advances towards her. And when she refused, he just slapped her across the face violently.
And I think in that case, it left like a mark.
Yeah. Exactly, because some of the women took photos of the abuse, so it's actually photographically documented. And also the friends of the women that they talked to, including the author Salman Rushdie, also corroborated the allegations. And of course, Schneiderman denies the allegations, but he resigned from his position. So the reason why we're talking about this, I mean, it's not... it's nothing new that there are men who abuse women, and the Me Too movement brought a lot of that to light. But the thing is that Eric Schneiderman was a very vocal supporter of the Me Too movement. And he also, as and of quote-unquote women's rights, and as an attorney general, he actually brought a lawsuit against the Harvey Weinstein Corporation because it, quote, repeatedly broke New York law by failing to protect its employees from pervasive sexual harassment, intimidation, and discrimination, unquote. And he was, by all means, a male feminist, or at least he presented himself as a male feminist. And by the way, all of that can be read in the New Yorker, because the New Yorker was kind of the newspaper that brought all of that to light. Mm-hmm. So he was an advocate for women, right?
Theoretically, sure.
Yeah.
And very openly.
And very openly,
very openly in public. He spoke at the Women's March.
Yeah, I think we saw this with a lot of other men who've been exposed by the Me Too and Time's Up movement, even looking at the Weinsteins, like they gave money to progressive causes. Yeah. Harvey Weinstein seemed to be the like poster child for everything that we in the US associate with liberal politics. And yet he was not a feminist. Mm-hmm. I think we can agree with that. I mean, you can't just buy your way into the feminist club. You actually have to do the work that women feminists have been doing for years. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to point to someone like He Who Shall Not Be Named and say there's no way he's a feminist because he grabs women by the pussy and he's done nothing that looks close to protecting women's rights.
She's talking about Cheeto Cheese. Yes. That's what he's talking about.
But what do we do with men who seem or may pretend, maybe pretend is the better word, to be there for women, but who are in reality just as bad as the orange Cheeto we have in the highest office in our land? Mm-hmm. The New York Times opinion piece on this suggests that we should, quote, look at the male feminist relationship to power. Are they willing to cede and share some of what they have to qualified women, or do they use women as helpmeets and stepping stones for their own careers? When women challenge them, how do they react? Do they slap them across the face or are they respectful? When they're pushing for women's rights, what's more important to them, the result or the recognition? So maybe that's a question that we need to ask about Schneiderman as well. You know, was he looking for an actual result or was he just looking for recognition of I'm a good feminist?
Yeah, yeah. Also, I mean, one other case a few years ago was the porn actor James Dean, who also called himself a feminist and also proclaimed that he makes feminist porn. And then women, including the porn actress Stoya, she came out and said that he raped her during their relationship. And then various other women who were in a romantic relationship with him said that he basically sexually assaulted them or raped them. And then also women that he worked with also said that he assaulted them. So this is something that happens over and over again. And really, the question then is, what makes a man a feminist? Or what are, you know, how do we deal with men who openly proclaim that they're feminists? How do we hold them accountable, in a sense?
Sure. I mean, and how many men actually identify themselves as feminists?
Well, actually, you know, there's a 2001 Gallup poll that found that 20% of American men considered themselves feminists, with 75% saying they were not. Okay. 2009 CBS poll found that 24% of men in the United States claim the term feminist is an insult. 4 in 5 men refuse to identify themselves as feminists, but when a specific definition is given, the number fell to 2 in 5.
Okay.
And then, so an increasing number of men said that feminism had improved their lives in comparison to polls taken in 1983 and 1999, with an unprecedented but marginal plurality of 47% agreeing. 60% believe that a strong women's movement is no longer needed. And then...
Wait. That was women of men or women?
60% of men believe that a strong women's movement is no longer needed. And a poll of Britain in 2010 found that only 16% describe themselves as feminists. Okay. 60% of men. With 54% stating they were not, and 8% specifically claiming to be anti-feminist. Okay, so...
That's really interesting. There was a poll done in 2016 by the Washington Post and Kaiser Family Foundation, and 5% in that poll, 5% of men said they were anti-feminist, 50% said they were not feminist. So these numbers haven't really changed.
No.
12% said they had no opinion, which I think that means that they're not feminist.
Yeah.
And
but just and I was scared to say because they might sound bigoted.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. Yeah. Like, I don't have an opinion about this.
No.
And then 10% said they were strong feminists and 23% said they were feminists. So that's like 33% claimed to be feminist.
Yeah, but, you know, since I'm sitting next to a feminist right now, I'm just going to ask him, you know, Michael, what does feminism mean to you? Why do you call yourself feminist?
Well, let me start to refer to the numbers you told us before, because I think, and when I started to call myself feminist, and it was around when I still lived at home, so it was maybe 10 years ago, around that time, it was an insult if you were called a feminist.
Mm-hmm.
And if you talked openly in a group, mostly men, because if you were in a group with women, this was not an insult, but with men or teenagers or whatever, it was insulting to them if I told them I'm a feminist.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this is still a problem even now,
mm-hmm.
in a larger sense, But if you're in a group of men who call themselves feminist, mm-hmm. so like you, James Dean stuff and all yeah. the, all of that, then maybe they say they are feminists. But the problem is, are they really? And how can you differ what feminism means to them mm-hmm. or feminism? And when I'm saying I'm a feminist, I think I never really called myself a feminist until I called myself a feminist, but when I got to university and studied gender studies, then I became a feminist. Before that, I just did the stuff I did it. It was natural to me.
Yeah.
There was no thinking about it. Oh, this is feminism and this not. I don't know. It was natural to me.
So you feel like there are feminist yeah. like principles that yeah. you lived yeah. in accordance so. With.
It was before you with, know that with it was my feminism. Education and family and all around that.
Mm.
So, yeah. And I think the other feminism with most of men now and in the hipster generation and whatever it is, and with the t-shirts and all of that, it's mostly then to gain acceptance in the group or, I don't know, impress women or whatever. It's just sometimes... Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that. There's a sketch from Saturday Night Live. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's basically came out right after the Women's March, right? So right after the inauguration. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, a couple of women talking to guys who would say like, oh, I'm a feminist. I really get what you're saying. And then the minute they would like call them out on something or question them, they would say like, oh, you bitch. And like walk away. And they're like, okay, not a feminist.
Yeah.
And it would continue on like yeah. that. It was from like the least feminist to the most feminist. And yet still they weren't practicing what they yeah. preached. They were using the term mm-hmm. feminism as a, you know, as a way to get sympathy from women, as a way to get mm-hmm. in women's pants. And as soon as that didn't mm-hmm. happen, then suddenly they were, you know, not feminist anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a friend, and this is the perfect example for this. He was like the feminist in a specific group, in an artist group, and he was very sensitive and all of that and whatever, and called himself a feminist. And then... time progresses and he met a friend of mine, another woman, and they were going out and doing stuff, but just as friends. I don't know what happened between because I don't know everything, but in some point in this friendship, something happened and he decided that he wants her as a girlfriend, and then he almost raped her. So this is not really feminism to me.
God, this goes back to the whole like friend zone. Like,
yeah, sure. This is a connection, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, well, and this is the for me, it's the perfect example because everything he said and he was the perfect feminist to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he presented himself like mm-hmm. that.
So I think maybe the difference. Maybe the question we should ask is not, are you a feminist, but how specifically are you a feminist?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that you do.
Like... Yeah. What actions do you take or what do you do? Because there are a lot of men I know personally who call themselves feminists, but they are not feminists. So, yeah.
I also think there are a lot of men who would never identify themselves as feminists, but they do the work of feminism.
Yeah.
They just don't want to be labeled as feminist.
Yeah, but then the question will also be, why are they scared of the label?
I think that a lot of male groups, feminism is still a threat to them.
Yeah.
So if they openly discuss feminism in this group, they are like an outcast or whatever. And I think some have the fear to be like, not accepted in a specific group or whatever. Maybe, I don't know. I don't have the fear, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of talk in the U.S. about, you know, millennials not wanting to be defined as feminist, or at least for a long time there even women didn't want to be identified as feminist. In that same poll by the Washington Post in 2016, 30% of women identified themselves as not feminist and 2% as anti-feminist. And then another 7% had no opinion. I mean, that means the majority of women identify as feminist, but, you know, there's still about 30% of women who don't see themselves as feminist and they don't identify with the term, and the term is what becomes sometimes problematic.
But I would say that this is also a form of anti-feminism to be that scared of the term itself, you know, because it's just, it points to misunderstanding of what it actually means.
Yeah.
Well, and it points to the goal of some individuals in the media, in society, to identify feminism as something negative. Feminist women are anti-sex. Feminist women are angry. Feminist women are anti-male. But if when you start identifying feminists as angry, prudish, and anti-male, then suddenly feminism seems like a terrible thing. But, you know, certainly there are women who are angry about a lot of different things. Are they feminists? Yes. Are they?
And rightfully so.
Yeah, and rightfully so. Absolutely. Maybe second, I mean, we talked about this before when we talked about feminism and women's movement in the United States, but, you know, there were certainly, in terms of consciousness raising in the second wave feminism, there were women who were taking back their own sexuality and saying, like, it's okay for me to say no. Does that mean they're prudes? Mm-hmm. No, it just means that it's not okay for you to rape them and that they want you to get consent before you have sex with them. You know.
Yeah.
What we talked about is what can men do to, like, demonstrate that they're feminists instead of just saying that.
Yeah, exactly.
Feminists.
So, and that was my question to Michael is how are you a feminist? So how, what do you think do you do in your life that makes you a feminist, or what does it mean for you?
As I said, I cannot say it in a specific, I don't know, I have no specifics to talk about because I don't, I just live my life around this idea. I don't know. It's just so normal that I don't think about it normally. But I would say I don't take actions to, I don't know. It's like if you said, why don't you hit someone? I don't know. It's just, you don't hit someone. You know, if you're not in, I don't know. For me, it's so normal that I don't think about it at all. I don't know. It's just, if I meet someone, it's, I have to start it again because I have mostly my friends are all women. So I have 3 male friends who I call friends.
Yeah.
So maybe this is a part of it. I think so.
Yeah.
Because most of my influences are coming from women. Maybe that's why from early age I was raised mostly by my mom because my father wasn't around. And then were always strong women around me. So maybe this was the starting point, and it was so normal for me to be around women, and it was nothing special. And so I think I don't define myself as purely male. It's just like, I don't know, fluid in between. And it's really hard to answer because I don't know really what I do differently to be a feminist. I'm just me.
Yeah, but then I mean
in specific events, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, so
if I don't know, have a relationship, I wouldn't rape someone. You know, but this is not feminism, it's just,
well, I mean, so I think my question is, like, how, for example, because you also work as an artist and as a photographer, so one specific question would be, like, how does feminism figure into your art, for example?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, this is another one. Yeah, everything I do in my artist life, I think is more or less influenced by feminism. So there are projects who don't have to do anything about it because they have just for money. So this is not... But if I have a project, the thought is... Firstly, all of my projects have to do with women. Mostly, just one project is with a man, but this is a project for money. And then I think about how to, I don't know, my angle is to include lots of, I work very with various, it's very difficult to explain my thoughts about art. It's really difficult because it's like, I don't know, how do you explain art?
That's a good question.
Yeah. Impossible. I think when I'm starting a project, and I started 2 years ago, but this wasn't even my project because there is a male photographer in Brighton, and he was taking sculptures from women's genitalia.
Vulva casts.
And a friend of mine who I lived with at the time saw this, I don't know where, or read about it. And she came to me and said, Michael, can you do it? And is this possible? Or could we do it and try it? And I said, I have no idea because I never tried it. So then I started the process to look at the internet, look at videos, and started to write the guy, and he wrote me back, and so on and so on. And then there was one particular thing that bugged me, because he just did vulva casts, and I wanted to include men as well. So I wanted to, and now I'm doing this since 3 years, I think so, 3 years. Mm-hmm. And the main focus on the project was to start to raise awareness, because lots of my friends who participated in the projects at first didn't want to do it because they said, no, it's too private, whatever, I hate my vulva, or it's ugly, and yeah. So lots of issues there. And I think every time they said to me something like this, I told them, this is the point to do it, because this is the project to raise awareness that it's not ugly, that is, yeah. So I think I work with bodies a lot, and with body images and so on. And I think when I'm working on projects like in this case the vulva casts, you cannot exclude feminism. It's there.
Yeah.
You know, because if I did it just for the casts and presented them somewhere, it would be a bit like, yeah, maybe pornographic stuff. Maybe, I don't know.
Mm.
Or photos or whatever.
So the goal is
to raise awareness that it's not
against like gender shame.
Yeah, and there are a lot of issues. Like there are lots of surgeries and plastic surgeries, and there is lots of background to it. And so I want to raise awareness to that as well.
What I think is really interesting about that is that in second wave feminism, that is, I mean, they started doing these kind of consciousness raising movements where women would actually still had these same issues with being uncomfortable with their bodies, being uncomfortable with their vulvas.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they would have these meetings where they would like put a mirror. I mean, this is where the vagina monologue, part of the vagina monologues come from, to put a mirror and actually look at your vulva, look at your body.
Yeah.
Something that would have been shameful before suddenly became something very empowering.
Yeah.
So to have these casts be something that it's not pornographic. It's showing women that they come in all shapes and sizes. They are, you know, you don't have to have vaginoplasty in order to have a, you know, an attractive, vulva. Like they're all different, it's perfectly fine, and it's perfectly natural. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the project itself is a feminist project in that it raises awareness even for women of their own bodies.
And I think that's the main goal.
Yeah, no, I think that's really interesting
project.
Okay, so and then apart from your art, how do you think feminism figure into your relationships too, with both men and women?
With men it's difficult because, as I said before, I have not that much friends.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the few I have, I think two of them would describe themselves as feminists. One of them not, because it's too old, maybe. I don't know. It's not like, I'm too old for that. But I think he's another generation. And but two of them would say this about themselves, I think. I never talk about feminism with them, so I cannot be sure. But I think I met yesterday with a very interesting woman who I didn't know, because she was at my art school, but I never saw her before. So we met yesterday. And one of the first things she said to me, I know your art and I saw something about it and you are a feminist artist. And I said, I don't know. Because I think I wouldn't say that I'm a feminist artist. I make feminist art, maybe.
Okay.
So I think it is a difference.
So you're a feminist and you make feminist art, but you're not a feminist artist.
I don't know. because when I'm talking with people, I don't say I'm a feminist. Okay, because yeah. this is the difference maybe with the t-shirt price. I don't know. So I don't call myself out, oh, I'm a feminist, and scream around. I don't know. So I'm acting that way, but I'm not, when I'm meeting people or relationships or whatever, when I'm acting like it. But
what
not,
does it mean? What does acting like it mean?
You tell me. I don't know. It's really a really hard question. I don't know.
Well, it's a hard thing. It's a really hard thing because we have these kind of self, we have these social
not mansplaining,
ideas.
Yeah, maybe. Not mansplaining. To start with. I don't know.
No, it's
there are lots of little things.
Yeah, it is hard. I mean, there, you know, you're right. There are a lot of little things that kind of come together as a whole.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I mean, for me, I think, you know, if a man calls himself a feminist, the things that I kind of check is, first of all, is he friends with women?
Yeah.
And that's okay, actually really a big point to me because since, I don't know if you've listened to the friend zone episode, but I think one of the main indicators is, does he have platonic relationships with women? Is he also interested in women as people, not just as kind of sex objects or
what?
Or intimate partners or whatever?
Yeah, and you know, this, I mean, this is inspiration one. Guy for the episode, for the friends on
the
episode.
The inspiration guy is your friend.
It's not my friend.
It's not my friend.
It's a guy I know.
It's a guy I know.
A bekannter, not a friend.
Yeah. And he's exactly opposite to me. I don't know. He has just male friends or friends, bros. I don't know. What the
bros.
Hell?
Bros. Yeah, he calls them bros.
Yeah, he calls them bros. So, yeah. He cannot be friends with women. He wants to have a relationship with them, but not friendship.
Yeah, sure.
Mm. Because if it's a friendship, he's in a friend zone. So it's not possible to be friends with a woman.
I mean, I think one of the main aspects to me is whether it's a person that's willing to listen to women.
Yeah.
You know? Especially when women call them out for problematic behavior, which is something that, as we said, happens a lot with quote-unquote feminist men, that they call themselves feminists, and when you start calling them out for behavior, they're like...
denying it. Or,
exactly. Yeah. So I think that's one very, very like huge point for me. And then also, do they, when they have male friends, do they challenge those people for sexist behavior? That's also something that's huge for me because... to me, if a guy's in a group of friends and they make sexist jokes, then you're not a feminist if you're not saying anything.
Yeah. There's a list of like 35 practical things that men can do to like show that they are feminist. I think that's number 5 on the list is insert yourself into spaces where you can use your maleness to interrupt sexism.
Yeah, and then also, you know... one thing that's also, I think, important is that men understand their own sexist behavior. Not as in, you know, I'm not just talking about...
Or just thinking about the behavior at all. And when something is wrong, think about it and maybe stop doing it.
What I mean is like understanding that you yourself are kind of part of sexist structures.
Okay.
Yeah, like a patriarchal structure.
Yeah, exactly.
And understand your own part in it.
Like owning your privilege, I think is one way to say that. Like, and some of that privilege is like be responsible for contraception. Mm-hmm. Like understand that you have like more power. And so like consent is really important.
Yeah.
Things like that are just part of the patriarchy and the way that our society is structured. Like understanding the role that you play in that and being willing to like disrupt that.
Yeah. Also, I think that's also a big point how does that person treat women that he's in intimate relationships with? Mm. Does he understand consent? Which is also a huge thing. We talked about this yesterday, that a lot of men or women both just don't understand the concept of consent. Even people who call themselves feminists, just as an empty phrase, just have no understanding of what it actually means. That, and then also kind of the political implications of pleasure, you know. We also talked about, because a friend of yours...
Two friends
of yours.
At least that I know of. So maybe there are more, I don't know.
Do you want to tell the story?
Yeah.
Okay.
I talked to two friends of mine, 2 days apart, and the stories are shockingly almost the same. So this is the first, I don't know, shock.
The first effect. Shock.
One is 26 and one is 25 years old. And both of them, one of them had, in all her relationships she had.
With men. So they both had heterosexual women.
So in, I don't know, 8 years relationship time, in all relationships, one of them had one orgasm and the other one has zero.
Oh, that's so sad.
Really, yeah. So, and yeah. And the one I spoke yesterday to said to me, yeah, it's like she has sex with the person or the guy or whatever. And then he just fucks her and rolls over and it's over. So, and then she cannot masturbate afterwards because she feels guilty or shame or whatever. So,
oh, honey.
She's really, yeah, no. Yeah. So, yeah. And I thought this is really rare, but it's not.
Yeah, obviously. It seems.
No, so, it's not rare at all, sadly.
I was so surprised because I never heard that from my female friends, but Michael told me yesterday that he keeps hearing that story over and over again. Yeah. And then I was like, actually, it's also part of being a male feminist to, you know, value women's pleasure and bodies within, you know, in relationships when you're in relationship with women. So I think that's also a part for me. And then also empowering women, you know, when you, for example, are an academic and you're invited to a conference and there are just, I don't know, it's a panel discussion. There are just males on the panel. Say something, you know, say, well, why don't you invite this woman? You know, if you know female experts, then just suggest to them that they also invite a woman and you only want to kind of come if they also can come, you know. So make sure that women are a part of the spaces you're into and make sure that women, make sure to empower women and support them, you know. I think that's also for me a huge part of being a male feminist because you have the privilege of doing these things.
I'm part of an organization, the Society for Utopian Studies, and they've been keeping statistics about presenters at the conferences and gender since the 70s, I think. And just having the statistics and knowing that, like, they have increased the number of women who have presented so that there's parity. I mean, it goes a long way. Mm-hmm. It's similar to what we were talking about in one of our feminism episodes in Austria about, you know, advertising the percentage of women who are in leadership roles in corporations. Just, you know, advertising that information alone, it makes you more aware of what's going on. And it makes you realize like, oh, well, we need to recruit more women. We need to have parity. Mm-hmm. We need to have, equal representation. Mm-hmm. There's a great quotation from Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the Supreme Court Justice in the United States, who, when she was asked how many women would be enough to have on the Supreme Court, and she said 9. Because there are nine slots on the Supreme Court, and she was, you know, and it's, you know, we are perfectly fine with having 9 male Supreme Court justices. Why wouldn't we be okay with having 9 female Supreme Court justices?
It's so ridiculous because in Austria, the Green Party is now out of parliament, but when they ran the last time, there were 2 women at, you know, the one was the Bundesgeschäftsführerin and the other was, I don't know what, but they had like a duo.
There were like, 2 of them,
There were 2 women on top of the party, and everyone was like, you cannot do that. There can't be like, nobody will vote for them because they're 2 women. And I was like, what? It's never a problem if 2 men are running, you know?
But now, even now, they're on the opposition party, the NEOS, the male...
The male,
the boss stepped down, basically, and a woman is now in charge. Mm-hmm. And even now, really debates on the internet and everywhere, when she's running, the party is going down and whatever.
So it's Liberal Party and the main candidate just resigned, basically, and now a woman will follow him and people are losing their minds over it.
But it goes back to this, like, are you really living the beliefs that your party supposedly has? And if your party has, if you're a Liberal Party and they supposedly have these beliefs in equality and empowerment and et cetera, it shouldn't be a problem.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I think one thing that's also important is if men want to call themselves feminists, one thing that I always ask them is, do you have, like, what women do you admire? And if the only thing they say is my mom, then we have a problem.
Although moms are very admirable. They do a lot of work.
Moms are important. I'm not talking shit about your mom. I'm just saying, like, is that, I mean.
I know what you mean.
Do you know what I mean? So Michael, what women do you admire? Tell us.
Lots of them. That's not the answer you want to hear.
No.
First comes to mind, I think, Marina Abramovic.
Oh, yeah.
Because obviously, that's from an art point of view, really, and valley expert, if you talk about Austria.
Mm-hmm.
And because when I started studying at the art school, I think these two women were my first really major influence.
Mm-hmm.
And still now. So I would take them on top.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them. Yeah, I think so. And then lots more, because if, I don't know, in music or whatever, I don't have a... If I'm making a list, we can sit here for a very long time.
But in terms, you know, it depends on like the field that you're in, and you know, being an artist, they're like two amazing feminist artists.
Yeah. And underrepresented, because they're really in the art world, really, really few women. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking at the auctions and whatever, the almost all of the highest selling photographs or pictures or whatever, a male artist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Still. So there are really a very few.
Women.
Really, really best-selling woman artists.
Yeah.
Female artists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that the only industry where women are really like paid more than men
porn.
Or get more recognition. Yeah. Well, porn and modeling.
Yeah. Modeling. Yeah.
But it's, I mean, that's all, I mean... Yeah. Not to say that modeling is only like superficial, but
yeah.
So, and I think what's also important is for men to also read feminist theory and also get to know like feminist debates and get familiar with certain discourses that they might not come across in their daily lives. Also on a theoretical level, I think that's also important.
Sure. Mm. Yeah, I mean, reading people like bell hooks. I mean, because then it also gets into intersectional feminism too, right? I mean, it shouldn't just be like Gloria Steinem and Toril Moy. It should also be, you know, bell hooks and Angela Davis and other.
And actually, I think bell hooks is a good starting point. She wrote a lot about men also and masculinity. Mm-hmm. And then also Raven Connell, I think, is very good. And also Michael Kimmel, who is a very... very interesting also researcher when it comes to masculinity and gender and power and all of that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And even reading like popular media, so like reading Bustle, reading, you know, blogs and websites that are contemporary representations of what's going on in the feminist movement or what's going on with women, they're read by more feminists, more women who would identify themselves as feminists. So like Bitch magazine and things like that.
Or in Austria, Anschläge and all of that. Yeah.
Anschläge, exactly. Yeah. And to, you know, to be aware of the debates that are going on in those media as well, because that's, you know, contemporary. That's what women are, lives experience currently. Those are the debates that are happening right now.
Or go to feminist events.
Go to feminist events. Yeah,
sure.
If you're allowed as a man.
Not break in.
Don't break in.
Just go there if you're welcomed.
Yeah. I mean, like there are women only spaces, you know, for, you know, female bodied women as well as trans women.
So maybe another question would also be like, did you ever like come across like sexist behavior in men, and how did you react, or is it something that came up in your life? What's your reaction to that?
I think
a feminist,
I have to refer to the guy again with the friend zone,
because
this is one of the first guys I know who is like a stereotype all over. I don't know, in almost every sense. I don't know, I never met someone who is like this stereotypical. I don't know, it's really creepy. and he is very sexist, if not openly in your face, but very sexist.
And he doesn't know it. He's not aware of it.
Right. And he doesn't know that he's sexist. Yeah. This is the...
Is it that he doesn't know or that he doesn't care?
I think he doesn't know, because he has this bro culture thing going on, and then he cannot... I don't know. Yeah, but he's really sexist, I think. And but not the only one, obviously. So because I don't know, the one guy who almost raped the friend of mine and calls himself a feminist was also very sexist in the leading up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he has had a facade going on mm-hmm. for quite a long time, and nobody realized it. I don't know. And when mm-hmm. I realized it, I called him out on it, and mm-hmm. then he just disappeared. I don't know. He was gone.
He evaporated.
And yeah, he was gone.
He ghosted you.
Yeah.
He was gone, but he never really reacted to the things as.
What did you say to him?
I can't remember the details, but I think as I really called him out on the things he did wrong mm-hmm. and he said wrong, and he I said all of it in his face basically, but he just disappeared. And when he came back, he had a girlfriend. One week later, I don't know. And since then, I never saw him again. So okay. He disappeared out of my sight. Yeah. And with the other guy, with the friend zone guy, it's looking the same way now. But I won't let it happen because I have to meet with him, because I cannot let this stand like it's not. It is now. Yeah.
So I mean, you probably have to explain the situation because.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Because he just calls me constantly and voice messages on my phone and stuff about his very difficult relationship with his colleagues, his female colleagues at the university. He asked one female colleague of his out. And on a coffee, I don't know, whatever. And she said yes. But now he thinks she would like to date him or whatever. It's like really, it's almost there. For him, it's a relationship now. He's really so deep into it now that, yeah.
And it's with everyone he meets.
But with everyone. Basically. And he has basically a backup for every backup. So if he, 2 weeks ago, one week ago, he lost his job. And in the job, there were two women who did the, how do you call it in English, the reception, the stuff.
Receptionist.
Yeah, receptionist. Yeah. And mm-hmm. both of them were possible relationship goals for him.
Yeah.
And, but one of them were 10% more. So he really defines this in a really strange and horrible and sexist way.
It's exhausting. Yeah.
It's becoming creepier and more intense mm-hmm. over time because he's getting worse.
And so I think, you want to meet him.
Yeah, I have to meet him.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, when I'm not meeting him, and if I'm not calling it out now, I think it's getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And at some point, maybe he's losing it. And yeah.
So I have a question. How do you approach that? I mean, it's a... Call, I don't want to say that it's calling someone out because I don't like the term
confronting
calling out,
him,
but
maybe,
like, how do you have that conversation with someone? Like, what do you say? Because I think that this is, you know, anybody who has a male friend who is a feminist, but maybe doesn't identify as a feminist. Like, I think that he will always encounter friends who are, misogynist in one way or another.
Yeah.
And how as a male feminist do you go about like approaching them and saying to them, hey, this is not cool?
I started with it actually because I posted under this strange Facebook post. I start posting I replied on Facebook, but he deleted all of it.
What?
Yeah, sure. So and he never spoke to me about it. It was gone, all of it. So that was the starting point why I decided to meet with him, because otherwise I cannot reach him about this topic. So I'm not sure what he, I think he knows that I want to talk about this with him, because every time now I want to meet with him, he is not available, which is very strange because otherwise it's the other way around normally. So I try to meet with him, I don't know, as soon as possible. And I think, I don't know what exactly I would like to ask him. I think it's the main goal, what I want to reach with him is that he becomes aware of what he's doing wrong. Because I think he's really dumb and he doesn't know it. He really doesn't know it. It's not an excuse, but he's really stupid. So I think you have to tell him what is wrong with him firstly, because otherwise I can tell him all of it and what he doesn't get it. So yeah, maybe I start like this. I don't know. I have to think about it. And there's so much with his bros, with his friends on shit. There is so much to talk about. Mm. I think I have to, I don't know.
Write a list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh. But this is a very strange example.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, taking the first step by responding and making it known that, like, it's not acceptable behavior. I mean, I think that that's a first step, even if he deletes the post.
But he
at least sees that there's a response. So,
Yeah, so we, Liz already said, we came across a list on XO Jane.
Mm-hmm.
35 practical steps men can take to support feminism. And maybe we should just talk about a few of them and then you can add whatever you want. The first thing on there is do 50% or more of housework. One thing that makes me that came to my mind was that there are actually studies, and those are studies in Austria. I don't know if it's the same for the US, but I assume it's not very different. That
I'm
women
sure
are
not.
Doing 75% of the housework, and then there are studies like in individual households where men and women are asked how much housework they're doing, and even in households where they say that it's equal, it's usually still that the women do more than the men because it's such a natural thing. It feels so natural
happens.
To us. Yeah, so, it just happens that it doesn't feel unequal anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. The one of the quotes from this one says, if feminism is the theory, clean dishes are the practice. Like, wash the fucking dishes.
Yeah.
Like...
yeah. Yeah. Then also, do 50% or more of emotional support work in your intimate relationships and friends.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Again, one thing that comes to my mind is friendships with men, where women are basically treated as substitute therapists.
Yeah.
Which happens so often. Yeah. And it usually doesn't happen the other way around. So I think that also makes a man a feminist, is to just be supportive. Also emotionally.
Absolutely. And I mean, we talked about this a little bit with the, you know, at the top of the show today, that, you know, this male feminists sometimes have women there, but are they using them or are they actually respecting them?
Yeah.
Oh, and then of course, consume cultural products produced by women. We already talked about that a bit.
Yeah, but you have, I mean, that's something that you have to be conscious of. I mean, and I think Michael was right, like, for, especially with art, with music, with books and poetry. I mean, you have to seek out female artists because they aren't promoted as much.
Yeah.
And also, maybe if you're seeking out women artists, also probably think about the male artists you're consuming. I mean, are you still watching Woody Allen and thinking he's a genius?
Yeah. Or Hitchcock or whatever.
Hitchcock,
Yeah.
Which I didn't even know. Yeah. Michael told me a story yesterday about Hitchcock that I wasn't aware of. So.
I mean, I think we can assume that most producers and directors of a certain time period were all probably misogynist dicks. I think we can probably assume that.
So sad.
But
okay, let's carry on. Number four is give women space. And I think that's also a huge point. I mean, it already starts with, I walk home alone at night, it's dark outside, and a man walks behind me and doesn't realize that for me as a woman, as a person who was socialized as a woman, who grew up in a female body, I learned from a very young age that any man is a potential perpetrator of violence to me.
Mm-hmm.
That man, for me, is scary. That is, for me, it feels threatening if a man walks right behind me.
Absolutely. I heard a story, and I don't remember whether I read it or whether it was on a podcast or whatever, but there was a guy who was coming up behind a woman while they were walking, and it was late at night, and he said something. He said, I just want to let you know I'm coming up behind you. I'm in a rush. I'm not trying to, like, you know, attack you or anything, but just, you know, you never know if she has headphones on and doesn't hear you at all or whatever, but just to say, like, hey, I'm in your space. And I'm coming up behind you and I'm not going to rape you.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to catch up with you so that I can rape you. I'm just in a hurry.
Yeah. Also, if there are several seats on public transport, don't sit right next to the woman. That's there.
Yeah.
Or spread your legs. Like,
Man spreading.
Oh,
yeah.
Man spreading is the worst.
Yeah.
You had a very nice idea about man spreading.
What was it? I don't know. You wanted to remember? Jesus.
Do you need water?
No.
Are you okay? You told me that you wanted to react to man spreading by putting a leg over
I know, yeah. I wanted to put the leg over his leg, so maybe I have the chance one day. I will try it then. Let's see.
Well,
let us know how that works out. Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe...
No, most times I think they are so not shocked, but I think the most, if I do it, this is one art project I did, and this was interesting for me because I walked in a bridal dress, not walked, with the public transport, right across Vienna, and the reactions are very, very interesting because... The farther I got away from the city center, the more angry and openly, I didn't want to say disgusted, but they really almost shouted at me.
Yeah, so they were hostile.
Yeah, but always men. Not one woman said something. So this is also interesting because it's in this case, there's mostly men reacting very emotional if something is strange or...
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, and it makes them confront their own masculinity, right? Yeah. I mean, like,
this was
you
the
know,
goal
you're
for
doing
the project,
something that's
so,
out of the norm, and it's an affront in some way to their masculinity.
It's really interesting. Yeah. So I don't know when I'm putting the leg over the leg of the other guy, I don't know what the reaction will be.
He's probably going to punch you in the face.
I don't know.
Well.
Maybe he's so shocked himself that he is just standing up and running away. I don't know.
You know, I mean, because then it's like, oh, why are you like men touching men? It hits on this like piece of homophobia that's like, oh, I don't want a man touching me who's not like family or whatever.
And then insert yourself into spaces where you can use your maleness to interrupt sexism. We talked about that. When a woman tells you something is sexist, believe her. Which is such a point.
Yeah, I don't need a dude to mansplain to me why something
God, Jesus Christ, yes. And this happened to me so often.
Yeah, this happens very often.
Because the thing is, even if the intent behind something isn't sexist, if it comes across as sexist, it's still sexist.
Yeah.
Then also educate yourself about sexual consent and make sure there is clear, unambiguous communication of consent in all your sexual relationships. Yes, this is so important. And the more I hear like stories from women, the more I realize how important it is.
But this is also about the story from the two friends of mine.
Yeah.
Because this is a big problem, a really big problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, I told them and I asked them about their relationships, and every story I got is, I don't know, it's horrible. I don't know what happened.
Yeah. In
different cases, but yeah.
So it's on the one hand, it's like this orgasm gap.
Yeah, but they cannot talk about their what they want sexually because the guy is blocking up or whatever and just doing his stuff. And
he's
doing his stuff, and it's okay. Yeah, and when she says something, he's angry or shouting at her or whatever. So
And then also
or just doing something and not asking her.
Yeah.
And then just continuing, even if she says no. So it's raping.
I think that I think BDSM gets a really bad rap. Because it some of it is about physical violence and humiliation. Yeah. But one of the really great things about BDSM is that it's
consent
all
culture.
Focused on issues of consent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's about pushing boundaries too, but you establish the guidelines ahead of time.
Yeah.
You have a frank discussion about what's okay and what's not. Yeah. And, it's it really places power at the center of a relationship, mm-hmm. whereas most relationships that we have, we don't want to focus on the fact that there's power involved in them. But BDSM really says, like, hey, there's a power differential here. Let's talk about it, mm-hmm. and let's talk about what consent really looks like.
Yeah. I think one of the problems in heterosexual sexual encounters is that we all have the script in our minds of how sex looks like in a heterosexual encounter.
Sure, because we've seen it on TV and in movies.
And it's all basically focused on penetrative sex. And it's basically, we don't talk. We just fall into each other's arms, throw away
clothes. Get it over with and it's...
And then,
it's,
and then fuck and that's it.
Yeah.
You know? And it's wonderful for everyone involved, which is usually... I mean, that's just... Everyone who's ever had sex knows that this is bad sex. This is not how it works.
But it's the...
Yeah.
Normal sex, and it's what's happening considered the, it's normal a lot of the time.
It's what's considered normal, so, and it's a huge problem when it comes to consent too. I think that's why I said it now. Then also be responsible for contraception, which is something that has enraged me since I was 14, is that it's completely standard for women to be responsible for contraception, to also buy. In Austria, the pill is... we talked about this in our Austria episode. It's not something that you can get for free. You have to pay for it. It's a private thing. So it's completely normal for women to be responsible for contraception, as in getting the contraception, but also as financially responsible for contraception, which is something that just annoys me so much because...
I mean, the other thing is just like wear a condom. Like I don't... you know, there's this huge rash of STDs in the United States right now among like younger kids, and we teach them sexual education in junior high and high school, and yet for some reason they're not having protected sex and they're not using condoms. Like, use a condom.
It's very simple.
It's very simple.
It's very simple, and it's your responsibility. If you're having sex, it's your responsibility to use contraception and also STD to not just contraception, but what's the word? What's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
Protection. Thank you.
Protection. and to go along with that, number 9 is get the HPV vaccine. Like, human papillomavirus leads to cervical cancer. It's a active thing that you can do to keep yourself from passing it on to your partner and causing her to get cervical cancer.
And I think in Austria, it's just routinely given to women, but never to men.
Oh, really?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. It's crazy. Then also 10, have progressive name politics.
Oh, you posted about this on Facebook.
I talked about this today on Facebook. I just saw while we were talking that I got a few responses. I'm scared to look at them. But yeah, I don't understand. So, you looked at them. Yeah. Okay. So I didn't understand why in 2018... women are still taking their husband's name after marriage. I don't get it. I just don't get it. Yeah. And even if your name, I mean, if you have a horrible name, okay. Yeah. Or if you just don't want to have anything to do with your parents anymore, okay. Then I kind of get it, but not all women who take their husband's
horrible
name
names and
don't want to have anything to do with the parents anymore. So it's just such a, it's such a symbol of patriarchy.
I was going to switch to my husband's name because it's shorter and it's at the beginning of the alphabet. And I instead hyphenated because I didn't feel like changing over all of my credit card information because I had these credit cards and they were all in my maiden name and it was like too much of a pain in the ass. And then I just never got around to like changing my name. And so now it's hyphenated and it's even worse. It's even fucking worse than it would have been if I had just kept my like my maiden name.
What's your maiden name then?
Schreiber.
Okay. And his name is Baez. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. And so you hyphenate them and it's like this long ass thing and it doesn't like they don't fit together well. Like they repeat the like certain like phonemes like the same. And so it sounds awkward, but like it is what it is now. Like,
well, Then also if you have children, be an equal parent. Which is not as easy as it sounds because of economic inequalities also, I think, you know. But it also ties in with do at least half of the housework. And also if you have children, don't just, you know, play with them on the weekend, but also do the hard work.
Yeah, I mean, and look, if you're a dad, you're not babysitting your own fucking kids. Like, you are parenting your children. Yeah. Don't call it babysitting when you take care of your children, because you're actually parenting.
Don't call it helping with housework.
Yeah.
No.
When it's your household.
Yeah.
And also pay attention to and challenge informal instances of gender role enforcement.
This is really hard. I find this really, I found myself like catching myself when I would talk to my niece or my younger cousins when they were little to say like, oh, don't you look pretty in that dress? Like, you have to catch yourself and stop and say like, nope, I'm not going to do that. Like, I'm not going to reinforce the things that like have been reinforced by society. So you say like, oh, you know, what did you do in school today? Oh, that's so smart. Mm. Or, you know, other things that aren't just focusing on appearance and focusing on having little girls help in the kitchen. Like, if you have a little boy, have him help in the kitchen too, because he needs to be a self-sustaining adult someday and has to learn how to actually make his own fucking food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be mindful of implicit and explicit gendered power differentials in your intimate domestic relationships with women, whether a partner or a family members or roommates. This is so important.
Yeah.
I mean, it ties in with a lot of what we said. It ties in with the issue of consent. It ties in with the household thing. It ties in with the childcare thing. It ties in with a lot of things we said. I mean, they also say work to recognize where inherent structural power differentials based on race, class, gender, sexual orientation, age, and so on, where you benefit from these structural imbalances. Educate yourself about your privilege and work on finding ways to create a more equitable balance of power. For example, if you're in a domestic partnership where you are the primary income earner, educate yourself about the gendered wage gap and work on dividing labor and economic resources within your household in a way that increases the economic autonomy of your partner.
Yeah. So that goes back to, okay, if you know that you're making more than your partner and then take on more of the work at home so that like they don't feel like they're both earning less and valued less for like doing domestic work.
And then, oh God, yes. Mm. Make sure that honesty and respect guide your romantic and sexual relationships with women.
Make sure that your partner has an orgasm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't be an online bystander in the face of sexism. Challenge people.
Blends in with the...
Follow Michael's example and call people out on their bullshit.
Challenge people who make, say, or post sexist things on the internet, especially on social media.
Yeah.
Then also be responsible with money in domestic and romantic relationships.
Yeah. So don't like gamble away your livelihood.
Be responsible for your own health, which is an interesting point to make in that list, I think.
They say that that men who are married, at least in the United States, men who are married live longer. And most of the time they say it's because their spouses like
send them to the doctor,
make them go to the doctor.
So again, this is the thing of men basically abusing women as the therapists and as the doctors and just waiting until they make their appointments for them. But you're not a baby. You're a grown person. You can be responsible for your own health psychologically and physically.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then also, oh God, don't ogle or make comments about women.
I think that one's self-explanatory.
Yeah,
don't treat women as like objects, basically.
Pay attention to the sex of experts and key figures presenting information to you in the media. That's also difficult because I also often find myself not recognizing male bias, you know, or because it's so normal to have male experts at everything, you know.
And this goes back to like if you're having a conference, like make sure there are women's voices who are represented because whether it's, you know, STEM fields or the humanities, there's a different perspective.
Yeah. Then also ensure that some of your heroes and role models are women. We also talked about that. Praise the virtues and accomplishments of women in your life to others. Suggest your female friends for projects, jobs and collaborations with other people, you know.
Talk about your girlfriend's awesome podcasts.
Yeah.
Things like that.
He actually does it all the time.
Yeah.
Have integrity with your male friends. Don't be a bro.
Oh, God. The bro is back.
When a male friend is doing something sexist, for example, being a deadbeat dad, down talking women, ogling women, secretly spending shared money, lying to the partner. Have integrity and say something to your friend. It's not enough to think it's wrong. Let them know you think it's wrong.
Yeah.
And let them know what's wrong.
Yes.
Also that. Yeah.
Know that.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Stop with that.
Then also, don't treat your spouse like a nag. If she is nagging, you're probably lagging. So, I mean, that one's... Yeah. I mean, I... Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, yes, but I don't understand why it's in that list. For me, that's kind of the like, again, that doesn't just make you a feminist, it just makes you decent.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, we're trying to normalize feminism as a term and not like a dirty word, right? I mean, we talked about this a lot in the in the United States context, in the Austrian context too. So people don't like to identify as being a feminist, and they'd rather call it, oh, I'm a I'm an ally, or I'm, and we'll get, this is the last point on this list, or I, you know, I'm a humanist or whatever. I know, whatever. Feminism is...
It means something different. You don't understand what humanism means.
I don't think you I don't think you know what that means. But to say that you're a feminist, they associate a lot with like female supremacy or other things like that. It's just equality. It's just thinking that people should be, women should be treated equal to men. It's, you know, focusing on the fact that women haven't been treated equal and like trying to fix that. It's about power.
It also, it also implies questioning your own position and thinking about what you do wrong. And that's a problem, I think.
Then
also, and that's the next point, actually, know that acknowledging your own sexist opinions and stereotypes you hold is not enough. Do something about them.
Yeah.
And also befriend women, which is...
A very good idea.
Very good idea. If you don't have any female friends, figure out why you don't. And then make some. Make sure there are authentic, meaningful relationships. The more we care about and relate to one another, the better chance we stand of creating a more egalitarian society. Yeah, I think that can't be stressed enough, because if the only context you are like in a relationship with women is like a sexual relationship.
Or a professional.
Or professional, then.
Or your mom.
Your mom.
Back to the mom.
Back to the mom. Find female mentors, leaders, i.e., be subordinate to women.
Ooh, that's hard for for a lot of people.
If you're seeking a mentor or want to volunteer with an organization, go with a woman or a woman-led organization. Not that there's a lot you can learn from women in positions of authority, which is an interesting point.
Yeah, that is. I think that one is really interesting.
And also, when in a romantic relationship, be responsible for events and special dates associated with your side of the family. Yeah, I mean...
Or just generally. Like, don't... I mean...
Don't... Yeah. I mean, I think that goes back to don't assume that the woman is kind of your babysitter and therapist and keeps your life in order and does things for you.
I'm not a secretary. I mean, we're not secretaries.
We're not secretaries. We're not therapists. We're not doctors. You are a grown person. Do your own shit. Don't police women's appearance.
Okay. And you know what? Honestly, women and men can both, like...
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Let me wear my crop top, even if I'm overweight.
Yes.
Offer to accompany female friends if they have to walk home alone at night or in a public space where they may likely to feel unsafe.
So that dude who wore the "This is what a feminist looks like" t-shirt, he wouldn't open doors for people because he said that that was being misogynist reinforcing the patriarchy. And my friend Maggie, we had taken the bus somewhere and she had her bike, so she was getting her bike off of the bus. And he just stood by and watched her kind of struggling with it instead of offering to help. And he's like, well, I didn't want to assume that you needed my help. And it was like, you could have just been a nice person and seen that I was struggling and asked. Like, I could have said no, but all you had to do was ask.
But
like,
Jesus Christ.
It was those types of things like, oh, I don't want to be reinforcing like these male stereotypes of like holding the door for women or whatever. Like, just think of me as a freaking person. Like, I'm pushing a bike and I can't get the door myself.
So I'm only a feminist if it saves me work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Or the other way around, but because I see this, don't be pushy about it. Because the guy with the friend zone shit, he is the gentleman type. So I have to walk her home and blah, 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 blah.
Take care of her. That's what he
said. Take care of her. He wrote about it.
He wrote about it.
But he also thinks that by taking care of her, that's going to lead her to fall in love with him. And then that's going to lead to him being sex.
Then inject feminism into your daily conversations with other men.
Yeah.
Which is really difficult.
I think that is that's difficult. But if you just slide it in there, like under the radar, and you do it on a regular basis, I think that people suddenly start to like I don't know. I listened to a podcast, Invisibilia, the other day, and they were talking about how it's very difficult to change individuals' opinions about things, but it's very easy to affect how the like social norms, because if they think other people are doing something and thinking something, then they're comparing themselves with these these other social norms. And so that starts to change people's behavior. So if they think everybody is talking about feminism and everybody is like involved in these feminist discussions, then maybe they'll start to move in that direction.
Yeah.
Or at least think about it more.
At least think about it.
Yeah, I think it's just difficult because if a conversation, if people feel like they're lectured to, then it's going to go the opposite direction. Yeah, yeah. So
it's
this
a
is why
line.
I say
every time.
You just really
it's
have
a fine
to slip
line.
In.
I mean, to be able to say, well, on the other hand, blah, blah, blah.
And it depends on the people who talk to. Because if they're open-minded, and then you can talk about almost everything.
Yeah. And I think for a lot of men, you know, the problem is not that they are like consciously and openly anti-feminist, but a lot of times they think they are feminist. They think they are like liberal. They think they are, you know, doing everything right, but they're just not aware of their own sexist behavior because nobody ever confronted them with it.
I talked to a guy once. I don't know where and when. It's a long time ago. And he said to me, because we were talking about feminism and lots of other stuff, but also about feminism. And he told me, I'm not a feminist, but I like women. So I thought, okay, this is interesting. But he didn't refer. He didn't
so he said he liked
it.
Women, but he's not a feminist.
He's not a feminist, but he likes women.
Well, I mean,
so, yeah. Okay. I don't know what this means.
I'm not sure either.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe in a sexual way.
Maybe. Jesus.
Yeah. Jesus. If you have a tendency to behave inappropriately toward women when you are under the influence of drugs or alcohol, do not consume drugs or alcohol.
Yeah. But this also, if you cannot process alcohol, don't drink alcohol.
Yeah.
If you get violent, don't drink it. It's just
And get a therapist.
Yeah, it's better.
Be aware of the physical and emotional space you occupy and don't take up more space than you need. This is also so important because I think this figures into a lot of relationships men and women have with each other, even, you know, non-sexual relationships.
Well, and we talked about this when we talked with Karen Carbo, like, you know, our society generally has a problem with women who take up who take up space, period. But we have no problem with men who man spread, who take up airspace, who talk more, whatever. And if we just pay attention to that, like be aware of that, eventually just becoming aware of something leads to changing behavior.
Then also walk the walk about income inequality. It says women still earn about 77% as much as men. This is the United States numbers. If you are in a position where you are financially able to do so, consider donating a symbolic 23% of your income to social justice oriented causes. If 23 sounds like a lot to you, that's because it is a lot, and it's also a lot for women who don't have a choice whether to forfeit this amount or not.
Also, so
if you are in a position where you pay people, then pay them the same. Of course, this goes without saying, but
yes.
Also, get in the habit of treating your maleness as an unearned privilege that you have to actively work to cede, rather than femaleness being an unearned disadvantage that women have to work to overcome. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much to unpack in that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Also, I mean, this whole thing of femininity being something that's always like coded as a weakness in our society in so many ways.
Well, and this kind of reminds me of what Michael was saying at the beginning, that, you know, people don't want to identify themselves, men don't like to identify themselves as feminists. It's the same thing. It's like using femininity as an insult. It's so common. You run like a girl, you hit like a girl, you do whatever like a girl. That's always coded as negative. And if we can get away from femaleness or being a woman being a disadvantage and something that's an insult, then maybe we can, you know, break out of that issue.
And I actually thought about that quite recently. it was like an article about, or I talked to someone about wage inequality, and we talked about why women don't ask for raises, and that the assumption always is that women have to do this and this and this, women have to be more assertive, women have to, you know, it's always our automatic assumption is always that women have to change their own behavior, not the other way around.
There's a great book about it called Women Don't Ask, and it's about how women like often don't negotiate and don't do that kind of stuff. But you know, if the first offer wasn't a shitty offer that you forced people to negotiate, then maybe there wouldn't be this kind of income gap between men and women doing the same job.
Yeah, maybe the problem is that those cultures are just so patriarchal and so masculine.
Yes.
And yeah, so maybe that's the problem. And then also 35, self-identify as feminist.
Yep.
Don't be a humanist.
Or be a humanist, but also a feminist. I mean,
but both. Also understand what humanist means, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think I've really enjoyed having you on the podcast today, Michael, because I think that we don't often talk to men about their feminism. Have those kind of conversations with men in our lives about how they see themselves as being feminist. So I think maybe this is like a good example of like a way that we can like approach the men in our lives about like how they are feminist and can be more feminist.
I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that when you don't have to be, because this is another point, when you call yourself a feminist and people say, "Yo, you have to be gay to call yourself a feminist or whatever," it's bullshit.
So, it's completely true.
Yeah, it's completely true. Okay. but so I think it's very natural for me, at least. And it shouldn't be that big a deal. I don't know. But it is, unfortunately.
And it's also a problem that, conversations about feminism usually happen. It's important that women talk about feminism, but if there are
also men should talk about it.
Yeah, men and too. Yeah. So, I mean, this is also something that just comes to my mind. I listened to a podcast about the Me Too movement. It was a German podcast, a German feminist podcast. And they talked about how the Me Too movement showed men that they never talk about consent with their friends.
Yeah, I read that. There was an article in Die Zeit, I think.
Yeah, so that it's something that women talk a lot about. They talk about the sexual experiences with men. They talk about their experiences with sexual violence, but men don't talk about consent with their bros.
Ah, bros.
And their behavior.
And their own behavior,
And reflecting their own behavior.
Yeah,
so, I mean, there are a few organizations that are like male feminist organizations. I think the most well-known is He for She. If you... probably all of you saw the UN speech that Emma Watson gave. Then in the US, there's also the organization called National Organization of Men Against Sexism. Then there's a European Men Pro-Feminist Network. And then there's also the White Ribbon Campaign that you probably also know. It's about, it's against violence against women. I feel like it's, some of their campaigns are a bit patronizing at times, and it's like men protecting women sort of thing, which I don't think is necessarily a feminist thing. But, you know.
But we'll put links to all of that in the show notes and up on the website.
We will.
So that you can forward that stuff to your friends.
Do you want to tell people where they can find you on the interwebs?
Ooh, yeah, I have a homepage, but it's not very good. I don't know. It's not very good. I'm not that present in the internet. Because they deleted my Instagram account. you can find me when you Google or whatever search engine you use. Michael Würmer, but it's spelled with U-E-R-M-E-R.
So it's Michael W-U-E-R-M-E-R site.wordpress.com. You have an Instagram account again.
But it's not really.
It's not really,
So I have to put time and it's not, it takes time to restart it, I think.
Instagram keeps deleting accounts that are explicit or whatever. And some of the art dealing with sexuality and gender, you know, is didn't like that. So it was deleted, but now there is an Instagram account again.
Yeah, under the same name. The homepage. And there's a link on the homepage to the Instagram account.
So, WordPress, Michael Wilmer's site, WordPress.com, Instagram.
Yeah.
And...
Or you can write me on the WordPress site.
Yeah.
If there are any questions about anything. I don't
know. About anything.
About anything.
Are you sure you want to say that?
Maybe. I don't know.
So if you have any question about anything, write Michael.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please don't.
If you have questions about the podcast, you can write us.
You can write us at shewhopersistedpodcast@gmail.com. You can also pop us a line on Facebook. You can tweet at us at shewhopersistedpod. You can find
Instagram.
Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, website, shewhopersisted.com. We will very soon have a very new webpage that will look very fancy. Rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe to us. That goes without saying. Also, there's a Patreon. Patreon.com/shewhopersisted if you want to support our show, then please do that. And that's all, I think. Is there anything else?
I think it is.
Yeah. That's it.
I think that's it.
Follow Michael on Instagram. Don't report him. Don't report
him. Or report me. Maybe this is better. I don't know.
Why?
I don't know.
All right.
Boycott Instagram. I don't know.
Okay. Well, then, until next time.
Yeah.
Right. Stay nasty.
Stay nasty.
Bye.
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 Der Geschwistergrün-Podcast.
Land der Berge.
Land am Strome.
Land von Jack Unterweger und Elfriede Blaunsteiner.
Das reimt sich jetzt nicht ganz, aber wir werden uns nicht mit den großen Töchtern und Söhnen dieses Landes beschäftigen, sondern mit den grauslichsten Grauslichkeiten.
Aus der Insel der Seligen, von uns, für euch und das jede Woche. Wir sind der Geschwistergrimm-Podcast. Mein Name ist Beatrice Frasel.
Und ich bin Georgina Frasel.
Wir machen den ersten True-Crime-Podcast Österreichs.
Aber bei uns bleibt es nicht bei True-Crime, sondern ihr hört auch allerhand Gruseliges mit weniger realem Hintergrund.
Subscribed auf iTunes oder wo immer ihr Podcast hört und freut euch auf die erste Folge am 30. April.
Wir freuen uns auf jeden Fall.